This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
The BFM Breakfast Grill, connecting you to the top people and ideas. Presented by U Mobile.
On the hot seat this morning is Yang Bohomat Yeo Bi-yin, the Minister of Energy, Science, Technology, Environment and Climate Change. Let's begin, Yang Bohomat Bi-yin, with Malaysia's energy sector, where electricity generation and distribution is concerned. The new government's pledge to disband all monopolies is key where the national power utility is concerned. With a stranglehold on both power distribution and power retail, what are you doing to deregulate and liberalise the sector to meet your aims of increasing renewable energy in our mix from 2% currently or less to 20% by 2025?
You're asking two questions right now. The first one is what do we do with the market structure of power sectors? And second is how do we increase renewable energy in our generation mix in our planning for electricity? The first question is that what do we do with the market structure? End of last year, I have already reactivated my power. My power will act as an entity where we'll look into how do we reform power structure, power sector market structure in Malaysia. So what, if you are looking at the power sectors right now, the generation, the transmission and distribution, as well as the retail, we do not have, there's a lack of competition on the distribution and retail side. And so the reform plan of the market structure that you will be coming, and I think we will be announcing in the second quarter of the year, would be how do we increase competition in the other of this value chain of the distribution, as well as on the retail side. So right now, I cannot actually disclose much on this, but once we have the firm policies that we will announce it in the second quarter of the year. One of the things I learned as a minister, the first few weeks I learned as a minister, is that we cannot disclose prematurely on the policies that we have not firm up and everything. So we will announce the policies in the second quarter of the year. That is on market structure. Second one on renewable energy. Renewable energy, how do we actually increase from 2% to 20% by 2025? It is in your power generation planning. Every 6 months, every month, we will look through our power generation planning, electricity generation planning, where we are looking into what is our generation mix and how do we plan up. Plan up means how do we increase the generation through large scale solar or a power or fossil fuel power plant, etc. How do we plan up and where, when do we tender, etc. So through planning, you can actually do that very easily. And as a matter of fact, we have just passed the JPAT, what we call Jawatan Kuasa Perancangan Electricity, where we actually will hit our target by 2025 with this 20% renewable energy.
Okay, Bi-yin, the issue of dismantling the monopolies on power retail and distribution, you talk about a policy decision to be announced by the second quarter. Mm. Will that be in the fourth month, the fifth month, or the sixth month?
That depends a lot on the first on the committee, and second is on the cabinet decision, right? Okay. So sometimes when we say second quarter of the year, then you have a little bit of flexibility in terms of when the cabinet decides that the first cabinet paper is not approved, you know, you have another two more weeks to actually go through and then do that. So I can only say it's roughly in April and May, but it may delay a little. But we were just looking at the second quarter of the year as a commitment of the government to announce a policy decision.
Okay, I know you can't talk about policy or the decisions you're going to be making, but in equivalent jurisdictions where there has been some success in power retail and distribution competitiveness, what are the mechanisms that you like?
So as I said, there are many options that we are looking at, and these options, I cannot tell you as a minister without detail, because that will kill the investors' thought about what is the power sector is going to be like. So I will announce it in the second quarter of the year.
In terms of generation and the power mix, I think we have an overwhelming preponderance of coal and gas as the natural feed-in for raw materials. Obviously, more optimal would be renewable sources. You've already cancelled four IPPs for the lopsided ways in which they were formulated. Mm. What are your thoughts on this front in terms of how we're going to restructure the mix?
When we were looking at generation, we are really looking into first the reserve margin. That means how much we generate and how much we actually need.
That's right.
So now our reserve margin is at 32%, and it's already at the high side. If we continue to plan up, that means we continue to have more power plant, it will actually increase to 40% over. So that is why the first thing that we do is to cancel out some of the new award that we have just awarded, conditional letter of award to those people who do not comply to the condition, and then we'll cancel straight. These are some of the power plant that we are looking at. So we will slow down our plan up, slow down the construction or the bidding of the tender of power fossil fuel based power plant, because we do not need that much of energy, because 1/3 of our electricity tariff is actually to pay for capacity payment. That means to pay for your reserve margin. The higher it is, the higher you will have got to pay. Right now, we are 32%, comfortable, very good for security, but we can actually reduce further. So in our power planning as well, we actually also plan by 2030 to reduce it to 25%, and hopefully we'll be able to, in the long term, to 20%, which will actually optimize our capacity payment if we are still in a PPA regime.
Okay, because obviously it's about the reliability of the generation.
Yeah.
Power can't be stored. I think once you create it, it's got to waste, right? But we have this policy in place because of several incidents of brownouts and blackouts in the past. I think in the late 90s there was at least a couple, and in the late 80s there were a couple. What are you going to do in terms of the new the renewable energy sources in terms of the reliability? Because the sun doesn't always shine, the waves don't always crash, and you know, the water doesn't always flow through the rivers.
So when you look into electricity, you have to see, in electricity planning, we're always looking into what is our base load. That means the base to supply the average or the base demand. And whenever we plan up, that means how much of a power plant you need, or how much of large-scale solar or solar you need, actually depends on the peak demand. So your plan up, your capacity needs to meet your peak demand. And with solar, that means solar is actually intermittent. People are asking, how can we actually make sure that the sun doesn't shine in the 24 hours? How do we apply? So it is not. Actually, sun is to help us to reduce our peak demand. For example, peak demand in Malaysia is actually 12 noon. It's actually in the afternoon where people are turning on air cons, etc. So, and this is when our sun shines. And that will actually help us to reduce the peak demand. With reduction of peak demand, we reduce what we call an open cycle gas turbine, where actually it generates at a much higher cost than our base load, and even a much higher cost than right now the levelized cost of electricity for solar. So that is what we are looking at, because we are only at 2%. We are not talking about we are at 60%, where we need to think of the intermittency and storage. We are actually at 2%, and even as we reach 10%, we are actually at the reducing peak demand function, where we put on our renewable energy.
Well, it's all about the reliability of power supply, isn't it, Bian? Because you want to have a complete 100% reliability, because there's obviously big business at stake here.
Yeah.
When you get to 20% from renewable sources, can you, hand on heart, say that we can rely on non-renewable sources?
So we have do a power study on a power planning on what, when does intermittency problem will kick in? It will kick in at 35%. Solar. So we are actually at only 20% solar, where we are only looking at how reducing peak demand to reduce our open cycle gas turbine generation costs.
I'm talking this morning to Yang Bohamat Yeo Bi-Yin, the Minister of Energy, Science, Technology, Environment and Climate Change. We're going to be coming back and we're going to be discussing more on renewable sources, IPPs and their contracts, as well as the solar PV system, BFM 89.9.
You are listening to the BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U Mobile.
YB, you'll be in the Minister of Energy, Science, Technology, Environment and Climate Change with me on the grill this morning. Now, the four IPPs that you cancelled, Minister, were Malakoff Tanaga's 700 megawatts gas power plant in Kapa. You also cancelled Tanaga Aman Majestic's 1,400 megawatt plant in Paka, Sabah Development Energy and SM Hydro's hydropower in Sandakan, and Edra Power of 1MDB fame. They had 400 megawatts of solar power quota, and you ended that as well. Now, going forward, I understand that a lot of the IPPs IPPs are under concessions which have a finite term to them.
Yeah.
What can we expect on this IPP examination front?
At this moment, I cannot disclose much on what we are doing with the IPPs. But what I can say as a whole is that the ministry is looking into the IPPs and also looking into the PPA regime. And of course, there are things that those with the contract and with firm contract, they are just very limited things that you can do. Those without a firm contract or with a clause that we can actually work on, we will be looking into that. What I can promise the people of Malaysia is that by mid of this year, you will know the policy decision, and then the market structure reform will take about 24 months from mid of next year.
Okay. Because the majority of Malaysia's gas power and requirements are actually driven by fossil fuels.
Yeah.
Coal and gas, I can't remember exactly how much Malaysia needs every year, something, I don't know, 18,000 megawatts or something?
So we are at 24 gigawatt of a capacity installed. And every day we are actually looking at about 18.5, 19 or 20 gigawatt of demand.
So we produce about 4 gigawatts that we don't really need.
24.
Yeah. Okay. Now, how can you reduce this dependence on fossil fuels if there are existing contracts in place which are protected by contract sanctity and you can't touch them because obviously there's legal and financial repercussions from this?
So what we do is to slow down the plan up. So the moment you slow down the plan up, you would
What do you mean by slow down the plan up?
It means slow down the construct, the bidding, the tender of power plant construction. So every year we will have an increase in demand. Every year, because of increase in population and increase in our economic growth, actually we have an increase in demand.
Roughly the same quantum as GDP growth.
No, we are actually at decoupling. Right now, we are more sort of service oriented economy. For example, a GDP growth of 4.5% this year will give us a 2-3% in electricity generation.
Okay, so it's inversely proportionate then.
No, not inversely proportionate. It's slightly. It's increasing, but at a slower rate than our GDP growth because we are service oriented.
Okay, can it be forecasted going forward?
Yes, about 2%, but that is excluding what we are going to do in energy efficiency front. So the moment our economy moves towards more service oriented, that means every GDP growth that we actually generate needs less electricity than the labor-intensive and capital-intensive industry. And the second one is that on our energy efficiency, which we are going to roll out on the Energy Efficiency Conservation Act, where it will further reduce our electricity demand with our GDP growth. So we are looking into a lower growth in electricity demand based on our current business as usual. But a lot of people ignore the fact that electric vehicle is coming. So the pace and the speed where electric vehicle take off in Malaysia will also affect our electricity demand. So this is what we are looking at. So in every quarter or every month, actually, we are looking into the growth and the growth rate and where does the growth rate come from, whether it's economic growth or other things. So what I can assure is that we are always looking into the demand and see how we can meet the demand while right now we have too much supply, so we actually don't worry about how do we meet the supply the demand. It's how do we slow down the increase in supply and then have the increase in demand, and hopefully they will have an optimum of a reserve margin between your supply and the demand. You will still need about 20-25% to make it safe and reliable.
I'm talking this morning to YB Yeo Bee Yin, the Minister of Energy, Science, Technology, Environment and Climate Change. If we can get a bit more granular this time, Minister, and talk about solar PV and basically household solar PV. You've introduced this net energy metering program to in a nutshell, cut long story short, allow households to install solar panels on their rooftops at no upfront cost, which is going to be borne by the industry and the stakeholders. Mm-hmm. How does that plan work?
Not only household, I just want to clarify that this is mostly for commercial and industry with large roof, because the moment you will have large roof, it makes economic sense for you. And household with landed properties and with a very a very small roof, then it becomes you have to check on every household or every buildings will have to check on their economic case on this. So net energy metering in a nutshell is this. We used to have net energy metering policies as well, but that is when you sell at 30 over cent, but when you buy, if you are above 300 kilowatt hour, you buy at 50 over cent. So that doesn't make sense. For us right now, you get an offset. That means we used to have a what we call your demand times with the tariff minus what you generate times with the displaced cost at 30 over cent. Right now is demand minus your generation, and then the net of it you multiply with the tariff, which will make it more economical for people with big roof. So there are two things that you need to look into here. Net energy metering is that policy. Solar leasing is another policy whereby we right now liberalize the way that people can actually right now install their solar panels onto a roof where the buildings don't belong to them. So it depends on the companies to come in to say that the assets owner to come in to sell this solar panel, give you a zero upfront cost, just like mobile phone. You know, you get zero upfront cost and then you pay installment, or you get zero upfront cost then you pay what we call cost of usage or price of usage. So this is how solar leasing works. And right now, there are two companies that are working on it, and we are still encouraging more companies to come into solar leasing industry so that we will have more competition in this solar leasing. And it makes economic sense when there is this net energy metering for many buildings, commercial and industrial buildings with large roof.
So what is this going to do for the solar manufacturing business? Because a lot of it is basically China-based. But I think we've got some here, but not a lot. Yeah. From a policy framework, will this galvanize this particular side of manufacturing?
Okay. So what we are looking into that is the solar PV. Malaysia is one of the top solar PV manufacturers in the world with good quality. Good quality solar PVs come from Malaysia. We have First Solar up north, we have Sun Power in Malacca, etc. We are already very good in terms of our solar panels. But what we are lacking right now is the engineering and commissioning service, the service of power system, solar power system, which is lack in Malaysia. That is why as we have this last year solar tendering out, as we have rooftop solar through net energy metering and solar leasing, we would like to develop our engineering and commissioning service in Malaysia. So we are not really looking into the PV. We are actually looking into the servicing and engineering side of it. I just want to add on this, and that a lot of people are asking, why do you stress so much on rooftop solar? That is for a reason that because Malaysia has a lot of roofs. I just give you a stats on it. We have 3.2 million of landed house, residential house. We have about 450,000 lots of shop houses. We have about 90,000 of terrace factories. We have 21,000 of standalone factories. That means there are a lot of roofs that are available, and these roofs are wasted if it is not used. And if you want to plant up a large-scale solar, you are using precious land. But if you put it up on the roof, you are not actually utilizing land that's precious. So that is why we are looking into this net energy metering and solar leasing and stressing on that further. But eventually, what we are looking at is the whole development of renewable energy, putting into electricity generation mix. A lot of people are saying, are we subsidizing for that? We are planting up for long term. What we see on the solar is this, is that because your cost of electricity depends on your cost of construction and also the maintenance, and it does not depend on fossil fuel price. It gets a right mix in the generation mix will stabilize our electricity cost and tariff. That is why it is not only on the decarbonization front aspect that we are trying to increase our renewable energy. It's actually into the tariff side as well. We have done study on, so what is the grid parity? So can we reach grid parity? Grid parity is, can solar eventually cost competitive with fossil fuel, a generation fossil fuel? We'll see that if with the 21 years of solar, we will be reaching grid parity at about 2030. That means from then onwards, solar as a generation per kilowatt hour is actually cheaper than our fossil fuel, looking at the trend right now.
So take-up and penetration is very important. How does a household or business or commercial user come to you and say, Bian, I'd like to deploy your net energy metering system and put it to good use? And more importantly, I guess, is how it works. Because to be honest, I didn't understand your formula just now. It was too fast and it was too complicated for me. What we used to have was the feed-in tariff quota system, where I think you produced at a certain price and you sold it back to the grid at a certain price, which is a lot higher than what you paid for Tenaga. So how does that work?
Net energy metering, we will be coming out with a microsite where those who are interested will go through the microsite, and they'll, step by step, you'll be able, not only you'll be able to look into the concept, but also looking into the providers, the solar panels providers, power system providers, where you can actually contact them and to ask for a quote. Net energy metering is that the operators, the owners, the building owners actually pay upfront. You pay everything. So there are a lot of there are more than 100 companies in Malaysia that actually provide this service. And then another one is on solar leasing. That is only two right now in a player. One is G-Sparks, one is Dietrolic. And now we are encouraging more. That means they will come to you and say, I install a solar panel on your roof and this is the deal.
Well, I'd like to sign up for sure because my house isn't that big, but I've got a lot of sun. Yeah. But grid parity by 2030, that assumption is ambitious, right? This is only about 11 years or so from now. Yeah. What are the assumptions underlying that?
The assumption is the dropping in the solar power panel. So solar power panel at this moment, so if we compare to 2009 level, it's already dropped 80%. 80% drop. We are looking into a panel and the storage and all the price, tracking the price and also tracking the fossil fuel price. So because the fossil fuel is price is actually increasing, so it will hit the point where they will meet. So this is what we are expecting at 2030 with the current trend. Of course, this is a mega trend, and we will be monitoring the price trend continuously to see. But right now, we are expecting to reach grid parity by 2030.
We've only got a couple of minutes before the news. Yep. We've talked a lot about solar, but there's obviously a lot of other renewable energy sources. Hydropower is one, biomass is the other.
Yes.
What are your thoughts on that front?
We have a lot of potential in terms of small hydro. They have and also biomass and biogas. But what this hydro, biogas and biomass face is a logistic problem where they are actually far from the grid. Whenever we talk about having a renewable energy, we are not only talking about renewable energy, but we're also talking about after you generate, how does it inject into the national grid? So the injection point actually gets other renewable energy sources less attractive. But hydro, small hydro, we are now looking at 20 over cent for generation cost per kilowatt hour. It is actually very attractive in Malaysia. That is why we have recently, when we opened a quota for feed-in tariff, we are opening up for 74 megawatt of small hydro. So
who will do small hydro? Will it be commercial users or will it be private sector enterprises? Or how will it work?
Well, companies do small hydros, 1 megawatt, 500 kilowatt, 2 gig megawatt, and then inject into national grid.
So if you own a little plantation, you own 2 acres in KKB, right? You've got a little river next to you. If you want to deploy this, how do you do this? Because you're miles away from the nearest infra.
So not all site with hydro potential can be injected, because one is you need to have the hydro potential.
Up,
the flow rate needs to be at a certain level to make it an economically feasible way. Second is that it has to be close enough to the grid so that you can inject into the grid. But the grid cost plus the installation of your small hydro makes economic sense for that. So that is one of the challenges that we face right now. But still, there are quite a lot of potential in that.
I'm talking this morning to Yang Mohamad Yeo Bee Yin, the Minister of Energy, Science, Technology, Environment and Climate Change. After this, Minister, we're going to be talking about Linus, we're going to be talking about single-use plastics, and we're going to be talking about cars. So stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
You are listening to the BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U Mobile.
On the grill this morning, Yang Mohamad Yeo Bee Yin, Minister of Energy, Science, Technology, Environment and Climate Change. Minister, I couldn't help but notice you were saying that we haven't really factored in the effects possibly of autonomous vehicles, electric vehicles on our Malaysian highways. Yeah. And it made me think over the break about the conversation I had with the Entrepreneur Development Minister, Dato' Sri Rezwan. Mm. He said that the third national car could be, because it's still in development stage, a petrol variant, which made me think, because at policy decision level, should we really be thinking about an all-new electric vehicle, which will be both affordable and amenable to middle-class and lower-class Malaysians, because many countries around the world are developing, China included, India included, cheap, energy-efficient vehicles, which are affordable for the masses.
To us, I think we're, as a government, we should be open to options available and technology of, available. And in terms of my ministry, we will be feeding in to the cabinet on the technologies available for cars and what are the technologies that we will for the future. And to me, electric vehicle is energy efficient vehicle is something that we need to will be moving forward to. One thing is that it's not only decarbonize the mobility; it actually helps us to save money. For example, one of the brand in one of the brand right now, electric vehicle, right now sells at about 90,000 ringgit Malaysia. And every time you charge, it's a 30 ringgit charge, and you will be able to, equivalent 30 ringgit charge, you will be able to travel 350 kilometres. But right now, it's not available in Malaysia, that kind of car models, and we do not have an infrastructure that supports it. And so my ministry is actually looking into electric vehicle, the chicken and egg thing. So your charging station as well as the electric vehicle, and how does technology and how technology will change in terms of electric vehicle. But we should not be discounting that there will be disruptive technology. For example, right now, storage of car is, let's say they are looking into different storage have different technology, and whether our charging stations and the things that we right now do will be compatible to the future technologies. Those are some of the things that we will be looking at. I will be saying that in these few years, it will be still be slow in terms of take-up rate on electric vehicle. But in the future, when the technology come and when the cost reduce, just like the cost of USB, the cost of this, the cost of mobile phone reduce, or the cost of LED will reduce with as technology mature, then we will be able to make even more economic case for electric vehicle.
Well, maybe the longer we wait, the faster we can get there, because
the cheaper we can get
350 kilometres for is interesting, but the 30 ringgit is not. But we can still roll it out in Putrajaya and Penang, certain areas, Georgetown, Putrajaya for example, but of course that's in whip stage.
It's not in under my ministry entirely,
but it should be. But leaving that aside for now, single use plastics. Single use plastics are things like straws,
shopping bags,
for example. You've got a roadmap in place announced October last year to reduce single-use plastics from between now and 2030, right? That's met tremendous opposition, most recently with the Malaysian Plastics Manufacturers Association, CC Chair, last night, saying that it's not amenable to manufacturers. They are a big component of the economy. They'll be wiping out a large swath of their profits. Now, how do you as a policymaker navigate these issues?
Let me say this. As a government, our role is to nudge industry to change. The it's not only Malaysia is trying to reduce our single-use plastics. The whole around the world are reducing our single-use plastics. And for you, as a manufacturer, when we look into environment, we always say reduce, reuse, recycle. But actually right now, I want to add another R, is replace. So how do we get a substitute to hydrocarbon-based plastics to something that is environmentally friendly, to replace and transform our plastics industry to that replace of which is the future of the material that is important for us as a government. And if they do not want to change, they will not be able to survive. It is not only about Malaysia industry. It's 30 million population. It's nothing.
Does the technology exist to basically replace hydrocarbons?
No, hydrocarbon-based plastics.
Hydrocarbon-based plastics.
So
because
plastics
some manufacturers, to their credit, have evolved their processes to have, degradable plastics,
biodegradable plastic. But whenever we talk about biodegradable plastic, you also need to define what is biodegradable, what is environmentally friendly,
grades, right?
And et cetera, et cetera. So we're actually looking at the what we call the standard of biodegradable plastics, and whether or not biodegradable plastic in the life cycle will actually, if they end up in ocean, will actually be less environmental detrimental than the hydrocarbon-based plastics. These are some of the studies that scientists all around the world are studying. So one thing I want to say is this, is that the plastics industry, all their processes will be the same. That means your machine is the same if you are producing a biodegradable or environmental-friendly plastics. The only things that will change is the resin. is the feedstock going into the process. That is why the government right now, we are actually incentivizing resin technology of what resin that can feed into the process to make it an environmental friendly future, what we call packaging material. It's no longer a plastics.
Sounds easy. But why? Why is it so difficult to do?
It's
more complicated than that?
Actually, it is not difficult at this moment. It's a cost. It's all about cost. That is why the technology needs to mature and have the scale, economy of scale, so that when you produce, it's actually at the per unit cost is actually lower. So all, I would just say that this is a trend all around the world. That, like it or not, we all have got to transform. We all have got to reduce our single-use plastics. We all have got to find a way to replace the plastics, the hydrocarbon-based plastics that we have today.
Well, the private sector is very quick to react when there's money to be made. If you say the whole world is moving in this direction, so then the proposition for an upfront capital cost wouldn't be so difficult, would it? So why the opposition?
That is why you need regulatory framework. We have a roadmap. We have a framework to tell you that the government is moving to that. And I think just 2 weeks after we have done that, the EU actually also announced of a banning of the single-use plastics. So you are seeing that as a policymakers, what we can do is to provide regulatory framework. And hopefully, and with that, the business people will then decide on what will be the market size that they are looking at and what will be the scale of it and whether or not they it will make a business case for them and then invest into this future for our country or for global future.
Now, talking about plastics, we have been very welcome recipients of plastic waste from all around the world. We rank, I think, in the top 10 of recipients of plastic waste because I think there's money to be made in recycling plastics. Why do we do this, Minister, and how do we change?
We have temporarily banned the... A lot of people are telling me why 2018 we are accepting so much of this foreign plastics waste. Actually, we temporarily banned it since July after we see the problem.
Huge problem. Why are we taking other people's junk?
Yeah. So that is why we have a temporary ban on it.
Why temporary?
Because there are plastics, there are different types of plastics that plastic scraps that you look into. There are high-value plastic scraps and low-value plastic scraps. The problem with that plastics import, that the influx of plastic import, is that they bring in rubbish to Malaysia. That is why we need to ban it and temporarily ban it and filter only those people who import high-value plastic and homogeneous and clean plastic scraps to be recycled in Malaysia. So I think the government will announce under local government. More of the local government because it's waste management. But I am in a joint ministerial meeting. So I have thought we are already near to the end of the policy decision on what kind of plastics that you can actually bring in and import plastic scraps that you import to Malaysia, and it will be so much more stricter. And we are here to say 100% guarantee no rubbish to come in here.
Well, talking about waste materials, Lynas, which is the Australian-listed company, now they have come run afoul of your ministry, and basically you are concerned with the increasing risk from the accumulation of residue of the materials that it produces. What is the latest development on this front? They say they've been investigated many times, and one of the most investigated companies in the country had been cleared. So where do we sit on this issue?
I've recently announced that they will need to send out the radio active waste from Malaysia because they have already promised to do it through two letters of undertaking in 2012. At this moment, what we are asking right now is really for them to honour what they have committed about 6 years ago. And now, that is the decision that has been made. I have already announced and the position does not change.
What are the deadlines?
The deadlines is before their renewal of the temporary operating license in September. So they need to start removing and start the process of removing all the waste. They are about the radioactive waste, which is called WLP, and there are about 450,000 metric ton of them. So they need
400,000 metric. 450,000 metric tons of radioactive waste in Malaysia.
Yeah, that is what we call what we call normal, naturally occurring radioactive materials. That means it is not highly radioactive like the waste like in a nuclear power plant, but they are lower radioactive waste, but they are right now in huge amount.
To your knowledge, has Lynas begun removing some of this 500,000 tons?
No, they have not, because they were doing research before this. So they were doing research on how to reuse some of these radioactive waste. That is why in that decision, we have just made a decision a month ago after a review committee on that, is that you should stop the research on how to reuse
that.
Removing it from the country.
Well, they got 8 months. Very quickly, yes. Before we let you go, Minister, the Climate Change Act coming soon. What can we expect?
Not really soon. It's in 2 years. In Malaysia, when you draft a bill, It takes a long time, because first you need the policy direction, stakeholders engagement, writing up the bill, stakeholders engagement again. And so we are looking into about two years to finish the whole process of Climate Change Act. What we want to do is institutionalize climate change action in everything we do, whether it's business process, government process, etc., in the Climate Change Act. So the people can actually look into the UK Climate Change Act to have a reference on what will be in the Malaysian Climate Change
Act. For those among us who are too lazy to do that, what are the broad policy directions?
The broad policy direction is that we will have a climate change action. There are two. One is that you need to adapt. One is that you need to mitigate. That means you need to decarbonize. How do you lower your carbon emission? That means business processes that need to do carbon reporting, etc. And the second one is on adaptation and in the reporting or in our preparation of work, that we need to think of what is the 1 Celsius degree scenario, 2 Celsius degree scenario of warming. So these are some of the things that we will look into in the Climate Change Act.
So many more issues to discuss.
Yes.
So little time.
Yes.
I'm afraid we'll have to wait for next time to do that. So in the meantime, thank you for coming.
No problem.
Huge privilege to talk
to you.
Good luck with the plan.
Thank you.
I was talking to Yang Mohamad Yobiyin, the Minister of Energy, Science, Technology, Environment and Climate Change, BFM 89.9.
The Breakfast Grill is brought to you by U-Mobile. Now with faster speeds every day. Baru la best.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.